welcome to Why We Cook on the Heritage Radio Network. Tonight, my show is sponsored by VS Imports. And a big thank you to Donato Di Jesu for donating wine for the hosts and guests at the Heritage Network to enjoy, the celebrity hosts and prestigious guests at the network who come to our studio. I'm Erica Wides, the host, your host of Why We Cook, and joining me tonight in the studio is the one and only Michael Ciccone, master mixologist from Back 40 and Savoy in Manhattan. Hello, Mike.
Hi.
How are you?
Great. Great to be here.
Thanks for coming out to Bushwick.
Adventure.
Yeah, it's an adventure. As some of you who listen to my show know that we broadcast from the Heritage Radio Network studio, which is behind Roberta's Pizzeria in Bushwick. So tonight, my conversation is going to be a continuation of my talk of seasonality, which I did in a previous show. Now that it's late spring, talking about what's really coming into season, talking about what's available, I'd like to sort of keep that theme going. People are sometimes confused about what's in season, what they should eat, what they should do with it. And so I took a little trip to the farmer's market today and looked around, and we've still got all the rhubarb and the spring greens and the peas, and strawberries have finally appeared in the market, which is great. They're a fleeting pleasure. They're only really here for about a month, so you have to get them while you can. And we have Michael in the studio today, too, because we want to talk about how there's this movement, revolution, if you will, in the world of mixology and in the whole sort of cocktail side and bar side of restaurants, how they are beginning to embrace using savory ingredients and seasonality. And Michael's really one of the first people, I think, who's done this in New York and has really been a trendsetter and is really on the cutting edge of it. And working at a place like Savoy, which is a restaurant that was really at the forefront of the earth-to-table movement and the seasonal movement. Disclosure, I worked there as a line cook many, many years ago. I don't even remember how long ago it was. And that's where I kind of really started to understand all of this and learn about it. So anyway, Mike is the mixologist, house mixologist there.
Head bartender, bar chef.
You don't like, yeah, I don't like that term either.
We all arbitrarily draw our lines at what we'd like to be called, not like, and basically mixologist works for
mixologist
me.
Mixologist is
good. It's on the card. I got them printed up, so it's set in stone.
So it's
now official.
Okay. Anyway, so working at Savoy and then at Back 40, you helped Peter Hoffman to open Back 40, or
yes,
you were instrumental in that.
Absolutely. I designed the bar, still design the cocktail list, and work there two nights a week.
And what's great is that Peter, you know, not only has really been, like I said, kind of the father of the Earth to Table movement in New York, but that's really carried over into his choices for the bar. I was there a couple weeks ago. Unfortunately, you were not there to hook us up, but we had a good time anyway. And the choices, you know, have carried over to the bar. He uses, you know, lots and lots of seasonal produce and products, but also lots of local beers and lots of locally produced spirit. Any like Hudson Valley spirits?
Hudson Valley, their price point still doesn't
too
work
high for
us.
You. Yeah,
given that it, as much as everyone remains committed to the local movement, or even seasonality, ultimately it comes down to flavor.
Yeah, of course.
And so we have some issues with price versus flavor. With
right.
The Hudson Valley, but we have Blue Coat Gin from Philadelphia. And basically all of our extensive bourbon and whiskey selection. Come on, that's all.
That's all.
Just straight
US.
South from here.
Yeah, right. You don't have bourbons coming from France, even though...
It could happen.
They were the bourbons. Okay, anyway. So what I wanted to sort of begin talking about with Michael was... We'll get a little background information on you, how you evolved to become this mixologist and what your career path was. But then, you know, we've been having this kind of discussion, too, about where drinks fit in within the larger framework of a restaurant, within the menu. Can you pair drinks with courses the way wine is paired with courses? You know, I think people are really starting to think of cocktails and of drinks as a whole course of the menu, as food themselves, just in a liquid form. Whereas wine is, you know, sort of an accompaniment to the meal. Can the cocktail be a whole separate entity in itself? So do you want to give us first a little sense of who you are and like how you came into this?
Oh yeah. I actually, on advice of my brother, took a 2-week mixology course or bartending course in San Antonio, Texas, 15 years ago, because I was then studying philosophy and dance.
Oh, and he, so practical.
In his infinite
wisdom.
That's
like me with a BFA.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Toilet paper, fancy, expensive toilet paper, but a lot, really enjoyable. Well-rounded. I am indeed.
You are.
Came to New York.
Literate. pithy.
Studying, thank you, please. Mm-hmm. My head's not going to fit out of the studio. To study dance, of course, how does every server or how does every artist support themselves? Food service industry.
Me too, same path.
Total cliche. But upon graduating from school, there's the simple economics come to it. Who comes to my dance shows? Nobody. Who comes to my bar? Everybody. You know, and yep. I am.
That's great.
Yeah, I have a fragile artistic ego, and so I want to do things that people want, and so I just decided to take the creativity that I've been flooding into dance and apply it to bartending.
I had the same path.
Totally.
Same thing.
Quite a few people have, but it's really so liberating to finally say, like, you know, there's that endless question, because I carry myself as a dancer still behind the bar. You know, what do you do? It's like, this is it. You're looking at it.
Yeah.
I am a professional bartender.
Yeah.
Slash mixologist, great. Or however you combine that. It's so, you know, I'm doing what I love and it's creatively fulfilling.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why not? I mean, and now it's also like professions like bartending and like being a chef and cook and all that are taken so much more seriously now as a legitimate profession than even 15 years ago. When I was a little kid, I was really, really into cooking and food and sort of had all these ideas about this stuff I wanted to do. And I used to, you know, make little food for my dollhouse. And it never crossed my mind that I could become a chef as a profession because it wasn't seen as something legitimate or something you could do as a profession. And, you know, now, Zoom, a few decades later, it's like this totally acceptable and very highly respected thing. And I think, and so many people I know in the field and so many of my students, you know, when I teach at ICE are former artists, performers, visual artists, creative artists, because we all did the same thing. We all wound up working in restaurants. And then I found that as a waitress, I was much, much more interested in what was happening in the kitchen than what was happening out on the floor with the customers. And that's how I wound up in food.
That's huge.
Yeah.
And that's, yeah. I think, the thing that the front of house always forgets about the back of house is that it's so hostile back there. The stoves, the grease, the flame, the constraints. And because the last thing designed for any restaurant is the kitchen. Just throw it in the back corner.
It's like an afterthought.
Totally. Yeah. And so likewise, though, the front of house doesn't realize that we have to deal with the people.
Right.
And it's
huge. The front lines, yeah, with the public.
We have to cover their asses sometimes and just deal with these insane,
right,
you know, we mitigate, so at least they don't get that. And so going back to an earlier point in my evolution, I was a Cosmo maker. Like, that's what I did. I was just like I ran the stick, I ran it well, I ran a clean shop, made Cosmos, Appletinis, beer, wine, and that's all I did. And I didn't really think of it culinarily speaking until basically post 9/11. Everyone got a little rattled. I started working down at La Zinc, and like a sense of ennui overcame me. I was like, this isn't enough for me. I mean, just the bartending, it's fun.
Right.
I'm really good at it, but there's not enough going on. And so I dropped out of bartending completely, did the work study program at ICE, where we met.
The Institute of Culinary Education.
Full disclosure.
Where we met, where I'm an instructor and he was a student and work study student.
And I teach mixology there. And so, and that really introduced me to the whole notion of any ingredient is a valid ingredient,
right,
to use
the
for
whole
cocktails.
Full total scope of food can be used in any form.
Just about.
Yeah.
Without question.
Yeah. So you're going to mix up a couple drinks for us.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Today on air. And there are drinks that incorporate some savory ingredients. You have some beets here, some black pepper, I see. And you're going to do something with strawberries because we like to keep things seasonal. We are going to take a very brief break here, a little musical interlude, and we'll be back very soon with Why We Cook and our guest, Michael Ciccone. Thank you. Welcome back to Why We Cook on the Heritage Radio Network. Tonight, our sponsor is VS Imports. And we want to especially thank Donato for generously donating wine for all of us to enjoy here in the studio. Although tonight we'll be enjoying cocktails made for us by mixologist Michael Ciccone, who is the head mixologist at Savoy and Back 40 restaurants in New York, and a former student at the Institute of Culinary Education, which is where I am an instructor. So we are talking tonight about seasonality and the earth-to-table movement and how that all kind of translates into the bar menu also. And also the idea of having a bar menu, that it's not just vodka and gin and beer and wine, that it can be a whole range, and how you can incorporate the entire spectrum of ingredients into the cocktail world, which is what we talked about right before the break. So what are you going to make for us tonight?
Today I'm making a slight variation on the red and the black, which is a soon-to-be classic cocktail I came up with 3 seasons ago. It's strawberries, and I took that classic savory pairing of strawberries and black pepper and liquefied it. So I made myself black pepper simple syrup, lime juice, tequila, because tequila has a great kind of, especially reposado, has a vegetal slash oaky slash peppery kind of thing going on that really lends itself to the whole drink. And then on the rim, it's sugar, salt, and black pepper. Mm. This is going to be pink pepper because it's the only spice mix I had at home ready to go. But it's going to taste great nonetheless, I'm sure.
Okay, so you want to talk us through how you're doing it?
So first thing you need to do, there's a variety of ways to go to the market and make great cocktails. The easiest being wait till berry season.
Yeah.
Strawberries come out now. Berries are late August, September.
Right.
And what you want to do is just take that and beat the crap out of it with a muddler.
So to speak.
Literally.
But no lacquer on the muddler.
No lacquer on the muddler.
I saw your video on Chow about not using lacquer. So if listeners want to know what I'm talking about, if you go to chow.com, there's an excellent video of Michael showing us how not to muddle.
And ultimately how to muddle. And also the muddler I was using tonight is from MrMojito.com.
Okay.
And you can get your own. And they're beautiful, handmade. And he'll customize them for you if you want something like flames on the side. I don't know.
If you take your muddling really seriously.
And people do.
People do.
A little too seriously, so.
All right, so we're muddling the crap out of strawberries.
And then we just add 2 ounces of tequila, 1 ounce of the black pepper simple syrup, 1 ounce of fresh squeezed lime juice. It goes without saying, always fresh juices.
When students at ICE come in a class, they come to me and there's a recipe for lemon juice and they go, Chef, where's the lemon juice? It's in lemons.
That's why you're teaching them. Yes. Always remember that people aren't born with all the knowledge they need. It's a shame, though, because you can't really get even domestic lemons and limes on any kind of regular basis. So that's the one thing as a bartender, I'm always going to Mexico and South America, wherever I can get my lemons and limes, because without lemons and limes, I am nothing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if we lived in an 100%, you know, one of those sort of 100-mile radius diets, we'd be eating a lot of apples and
I'd be so tired
and
of
smoked
apples.
Fish and potatoes, and that's about it. So there wouldn't be any flour. There'd be very little, no olive oil. So
which is why all these in working seasonally and working in restaurants at seasonal and trying to work locally, there's always exceptions to these things. And so you know, I have a few diners who come, and this is, you know, playing the host at the restaurants, who come and they just know way too much about what's available and what's not available. And it's like
food fascists.
Food fascists. And you're kind of like, you know, we don't, it's not 10 commandments. It's a really good way to
live your
life.
It's not a religion. It's a lifestyle.
Yeah. It's kind of like a great way to run a restaurant and offer really great ingredients. But if we offer something that we got from California or Mexico, don't bust our chops.
Don't freak out. Stay home.
Oh, so many people I've wanted to say that
to. I know.
I'm going to go ahead and shake this up.
That's why I couldn't be a waitress anymore.
I wonder if my days as a bartender are numbered.
No, don't say that. Okay, so you're shaking. Nice sound effects.
I like that.
Excellent. Sounds good.
Good Foley artist here.
So it's this beautiful, vibrant, strawberry, red, vaguely viscous-looking drink. I've actually had this one before.
I know. I think I've had it a few times too, but I'm going to taste it.
Yeah, just make sure it's perfect. Do we have to share with the engineer and the producer, too?
At some point, I think some will be left
over. All right, so pass it over to me. Okay. And I'm not a big fan of the salty rim, I got to say, but
I know,
like,
but that's the great thing about this. So you got your sidecar. You got your margarita. Mm. Sugared and salted rim, respectively. You're always going to do half the rim and give your guest the option. But when you design a drink, just like when you're designing a plate of food, you get to make choices. And I say you get the spiced rim.
Yeah, no, the spiced rim is good. That's really good. Because it's cut, I mean, it's not just in this intense saltiness, too.
Yeah.
And, you know, as all my fans of this show know, I love to talk about salt. Last week I did a show on salt. Doing another show on salt. Salt's great. And this is a perfect example of how the salt really balances out the sweetness of the strawberries and really rounds out their complexity and their flavor. But the little bit of zing of pepper on there is great, too.
I was just thinking,
really
like,
nice.
On my way over here, I was thinking, thank you. Why we cook. And it always leads to that question, why do we drink?
Why do we drink?
We don't.
Because life is difficult.
Because life is such a pain. But we don't drink just to get drunk. So I think we can get that option right off the
table.
And
not just because we're thirsty.
And in terms of alcohol?
No, just in general.
Yeah.
You know, why we cook? Well, we cook because we eat because we're hungry. We cook because we like food that tastes better cooked.
Definitely. Yeah. And so it's kind of like, if we drank just to get drunk, we'd drink vodka because it's cheap.
Or pure grain alcohol.
Or pure grain alcohol.
Moonshine.
And we'd cook without salt.
Yeah,
you know, and we'd just eat stuff that nourishes us, and we'd be good, and we'd go about our day, and life would be so drab.
And there are people who eat like that, too, which is fascinating. I come upon people once in a while who are like that, who are like, yeah, I'm not really into food. I just eat when I'm hungry. That is so foreign to me. It's like I can't. It's like they're speaking Croatian. I don't even know.
How do they spend their day? The only thing I talk about is what I'm going to eat, what I'm going to drink.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I know. I mean, it's all about the next meal. Why do you think I work in a culinary school?
Because you
surrounded by food.
Exactly.
I went to visit somebody I know who works at like a big midtown investment firm, and she took me into their pantry. They call it the super pantry, and they had like all these free snacks and
processed
power bars. Yeah, processed. I mean processed, but they had like really good stuff too, and like all this nice coffee and all. And I was like, oh my god, you guys get to eat all day. Look at all these snacks. And she's like, look where you work.
What do you do all day?
I'm like, oh yeah, that's right. Yeah. Oh yeah, I do.
I taught a corporate event for Google a few times, and I got invited to take lunch with them because apparently their lunchroom.
The mythical
free.
Google cafeteria.
Yeah, I think Google in and of itself is mythical.
Yeah.
Truly.
Yeah.
It's kind of spooky.
It's for like superhuman creatures.
Totally. And they got some ideas going. But anyway, back to the cocktail, why we drink, obviously to hang out with people and have a good time, loosen up a little bit. But there's no reason why we can't enjoy the taste of it.
Yeah.
And just as much. So.
Right. Like why drink vodka if it has no flavor?
I honestly don't know.
I don't understand.
I wrestle with that one. Vodka and soda and the vodka quote unquote martini.
Yeah. What's the point? Why not drink gin?
It's like,
gin is so delicious.
So delicious. It has a flavor to it.
Yeah, juniper.
Juniper? So for me, when you come to the bar, it's a dialogue. You don't just order what you want. You don't tell me what you want. I'm not there just to give you what you want, because if you did that, then just make your drink at home. If you don't want any interplay. And so people come, they order the vodka, and it's like, I have this cocktail list. Just like we have the menu for the food, we have a cocktail list. And take a peek at it. And for God's sake, just try something different. I work hard on these things. They're really tasty. I usually have to make a devil's wager and say, here, I'm going to make you something. If you don't like it, I'll take it back and make you whatever you want.
It's the same struggle being in the kitchen, too. It's the same thing where you have customers who just want the same basic things. They want their plain grilled chicken. They want their simple fish. And it's such a struggle to put stuff out there that, you know, that may be a real risk for people to take. But you want them to take it. You want them to try something new.
You want to push them a little bit, and that's why we come out, and that's why we try new things.
Yeah, push their horizons, expand their palate a little bit, too. Yes. Okay, well, we have to take another short break here, but when we come back on Why We Cook, we will taste another cocktail, and we'll also talk a little bit about the whole $15 to $20 cocktail phenomena, which I'm not a big fan of. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
want to thank Vias Imports for sponsoring the show tonight, and a big thank you to Donato for generously donating wine for us to enjoy in the studio tonight. Although tonight we are enjoying cocktails because we are in with Michael Ciccone tonight. You're listening to Why We Cook on the Heritage Radio Network, and Michael Ciccone is joining me. That's his ice you can hear in the background. And Michael is a mixologist at the Back 40 and Savoy in Manhattan, and I am an instructor at the Institute of Culinary Education, and that's how we know each other, because he was a student and a work-study student and equipment supervisor, so when I needed equipment, he was the guy I called. Unfortunately, you left, but it'll never be the same.
And the school goes on.
The school goes on. So during the break, we had a very quick conversation about you just coming from eating at Masa this week, and before the break, I mentioned my pet peeve, which is that cocktails have now suddenly made the leap up into the double digits, that cocktails that used to be $7, $8 are now $15, $16, $20. And you want to talk about that a little bit, about ingredients and why you can charge that much for a cocktail and if you think it's justified? I mean, of course, you're getting a percentage of that in tips, so it works for you, but how did that all come into being? And how did you spend $1,900 on a meal at Masa? And who's paying you?
Oh, man. I wish I could say I was a trust fund baby, but alas, I'm not.
You're not.
I'm a grunt. So first questions first. Cocktails always go up in price. It's inflation. And so I remember the first time I went to Milk and Honey, which opened up in 2000, it was a $10 cocktail. Mm-hmm. And now it's a $15 cocktail.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, what's changed? Because usually we sign 10-year leases, right? In the biz?
Generally.
And business, so the rent does it increase over the course of those 10 years?
I have no idea. I don't own a restaurant.
I don't own one either. So what I'm thinking is there might be, basic
overhead
inflation.
Goes up, ingredients go up.
Everything goes up.
Electricity, gas.
But the great thing about a bottle of rye, if I buy it today, and if I buy it 4 years from now, it's going to be a $1 or $2 change, maybe $3, maybe $4, but nothing too drastic. And the rye is going to taste exactly the same. So when you're making a cocktail, like a whiskey sour, today or making it 4 years from now, there's an incremental increase in liquor costs, fruit costs. But more or less, the basic cost of the cocktail kind of stays the same.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if it's...
greed?
It could be greed. It could be because we can. I mean, we live in an incredibly rich city.
Yeah.
And you dress something up a little bit.
Right.
And you can charge a lot more for it.
Absolutely. That's what I teach my students.
Yeah, and that's the market. And so, I went to Masa and they had a cocktail list and I do this for a living, so I know exactly how much the ingredients cost.
Yeah, right. That's how I am with food.
And so it's like $22, $28 for a cocktail.
Sick.
And if you're getting that kind of cocktail, the attention paid at really good bars in the city, and the bars are getting so good now, Milk and Honey.
Apotheca.
Pegu.
Right.
The Little Branch. And what the care they put into a cocktail is immense. They are such geeks. And you... the customer are the beneficiary of that.
Yeah.
But you open a restaurant, you're Masa, you are sushi. You've done your entire life.
Yeah.
You're dedicated to the fish. It is a temple of fish. You have a bar. Bar makes great money. And if you're charging that much for food, you can charge that much for cocktails. And you don't necessarily need to pay that much attention to them.
Mm.
It's going to be a great way to market up 500% and make some money for the restaurant. More money. So it kind of boils down to greed, because what's in the glass can't be that much more expensive than it used to be.
No.
And it's a shame.
Well, it's a reflection of the era that we just came through, when everything was really expensive because money was flowing and everybody thought that they were rich. And, I often find in some of my personal chefing work that with very wealthy clients, the more you charge them, the happier they are.
Exactly.
Because
so
it's the perception of value.
Yeah, if you're going to the Time Warner building and I'm going to make you a $12 cocktail, which I do at Savoy.
Yeah.
And it's a great cocktail. It's well balanced, quality ingredients. But I'm going to charge you $12 at Monster. You're going to be like, what? That's I can't wrap my head around that.
Yeah.
There's too much of a disparity.
Right.
So I just made a cocktail.
I want to know while we were talking. You can talk and.
That's bars, bartenders multitask.
And I had two sips of the strawberry, the red and black, and I'm already feeling a little buzzed.
I know.
Because that's how lame I am.
Awesome. That's why we drink. this is beets. Beets are, as you mentioned, kind of in the market year-round. They're picked in the fall.
Yeah, they're generally harvested in the fall, kept in cold storage. But there are fresh beets now. I saw them today at the market.
Yeah, and so we're getting some small candy stripes out there, which have a great sugar content. So I roast those, peel them to get all the actual dirt off of them, slice them in half, throw them in with some vodka. Mm. And here's the only place I like to use vodka is to give it flavor.
Right, like as a neutral base.
As a neutral base.
Right.
To have as your base in a cocktail vodka is is just a waste of space.
And beets are so sweet, especially once you roast them.
Exactly. You concentrate those sugars.
Right. Before we had sugar cane, we got all our sugar from beets. Like in Europe, sugar came from beets before sugar cane ever came over from the New World.
And so we infuse the vodka. We use Punti Mes, which is a very old school Italian vermouth.
Vermouth.
Which is
a little digestif.
My new favorite thing. It's it's if sweet vermouth and a hardcore Amaro had a baby. And they made Punti Mes.
I love Amaro.
And the base is Tennessee whiskey, George Dickel.
Nice.
And so I'm going to take a sip to make sure it's all right.
I'm a big fan of the bitter flavors in general. I love Campari. I love Amaro.
So that's a little trickier to get the beet flavor in there as opposed to the strawberries. You don't just muddle the crap out of them.
Yeah. I taste the Amaro for sure.
That's a fresh batch of beet vodka that I need to infuse for a few more days.
Yeah, I get a little bit of the beetiness, definitely. You get that. Beets have, to me, sort of like a sweet, like, dirt, earthy flavor.
Yeah, definitely.
And that's there.
Yeah, you want to say earthy, not dirty.
Yeah.
In the terroir.
Yes, you can taste the terroir of the beets in the drink. But yeah, it comes through, for sure. I can taste that. That's cool.
It's thank you. I'm actually just testing it out on you just to make sure that...
Really?
Now I know I need to infuse it longer.
Yeah, definitely.
And go home and fix it. So...
You could make like a beet syrup, too, probably.
I thought about that, too, but...
Yeah, but it would be really sweet.
Once the market really goes full bore, I'm really busy doing, like, preparations. Mm-hmm. Like, during the winter, I get to use citrus from California.
Yeah.
Which is great. But other than that, I got nothing at the market. I got butternut squash.
Right.
Which, again...
Sweet potatoes. But you did a butternut squash cocktail this year. I saw that.
Yeah. And so I can roll into the summer, or excuse me, in the winter. But in the winter, I also like to use just hard spices. The cinnamon, cloves,
winter
nutmeg.
Winter spices.
Yeah. Use the winter spices and infuse wine and reduce it. And
right. Do you ever do anything with, like with spruce or with pine? There's a restaurant in Seattle, I think called Sitka or something like that. And I saw on a menu somewhere that they were doing like a pine infused drink.
There's a pine liqueur on the market today.
Yeah, they were infusing, I think. They were using like grain, like spirits, and infusing it with pine needles. And then they were serving it like almost slushy, so it was almost like snow.
Ooh, how conceptual.
Seattle, you know? But it sounded really cool. I mean, I don't know.
And well, it's always worth a taste.
Yeah, because you were talking about winter, so that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, and so quick aside on masa, just as you can't really justify what goes in a glass being that expensive, it's really hard to justify a $900 meal.
You think?
On what's on the plate.
A tiny little piece of fish.
Yeah, and I'm sure it's the best fish. And, you know, fish actually, I'll probably remember this meal, you know, 20 years from now when I'm talking to my son and saying, you know what? There's no fish in the ocean anymore.
The reason you can't go to college is because I ate at Masa once when you
were
3 months
old. No, that's not the discussion I was going to have. So,
the reason you have to go now and work in restaurants is because Daddy ate at Masa.
Yeah, you'll love it though. It's a good fallback.
It's great. First, go to art school.
Oh man, I went to NYU, so my dad's still saying, yeah, the bill's still out on that one, big guy.
Yeah, when I paid off my student loans, it was a good day. We have to take another little break, and when we come back in our final segment, we're going to talk more about the ingredients that Michael likes to use in his bar and the crossover from table to bar. We'll be right back. This is Why We Cook on Heritage Radio Network.
Let me know you can.
There's a crazy wind blowing. A big thank you to VS Imports tonight for sponsoring Why We Cook. So we don't have much time left, Michael. So you want to give us just a quick rundown of how your menu is going to pan out for the summer, how you're going to deal with the upcoming tomato, squash, broccoli, cucumber season?
Oh, yeah, broccoli. Yummers. So what we've got now is strawberries, cucumbers, rhubarb, and beets on the menu. Mm-hmm. From there, we're going to move to watermelon. Mm-hmm. That's late season. Corn. Mm. I'm definitely going to juice and definitely do something nice with this year. This is the first ever beet cocktail, so I might as well follow it up with a corn cocktail. Tomatoes, all about tomato water.
Yeah,
making that clear tomato broth. Right. And pairing that with the nightshades, the peppers.
Peppers, nightshades, yeah.
Yeah, peppers. Nightshade family, eggplant. They come in and get that spicy kind of savory. And then you've got the whole berry situation.
Yeah.
Which, unlike strawberries, usually needs some manipulation. So
you also have the whole, summer stone fruit, you know, peach, plum, all that. So, I mean, that's easy. That's like a no-brainer. But to come up with a, you know...
Yeah, but that one, though, I mean, you'd be surprised even layering the flavors. My fallback for any first time I'm using an ingredient is, like, just do a straightforward sour. Mm-hmm. So you get your stone fruit sour, your peaches, your nectarines.
Right. Sort of play on the Bellini.
Yes.
Yeah.
But then you can build that fancy and you start to add different ingredients, mainly like anisette, mm-hmm. which I was... my manager went to Ascoli Piccino, and I was to use some anisette from their fair land, and they also have peaches. Mm. And so I made this wonderful combination with some rum and some soda, and it was this tall, refreshing peach soda,
nice.
Fresh muddled peaches, anisette, and you've got some complexity to it that makes it more interesting than just your basic sour. So it's exciting. I mean, this is a really great time.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great time to be working in food in general, you know, not just seasonally. I mean, it's just a great time. There's so much happening now. And, you know, to see... the development of something like this whole bar culture where it's really so much more about food in the drinks themselves and how you're matching the drinks to the menu. And, it's great. I mean, it's like we've seen such a revolution in food in this country in the past, 10, 15 years. And I think this is just another offshoot of it. You know, just more and more creative people finding their way into the field.
Yeah, I know. I was talking earlier about front of house versus back of house. And if one thing has brought us closer together, at least with me, is the constant dialogues I have with both pastry chefs and savory chefs about what's in the market and what they're doing with it and how they're using it and what I'm doing with it. And so it kind of like it's this, constant
Trinity.
Brainstorming. It's yes, without the Holy Ghost, which is so confusing.
Tying it all together and making it a great experience. Well, unfortunately, we're running out of time, but this was great. I had three sips and now I'm a little buzzed and I'm going to curl up in the corner and fall asleep now. But this was great. And anytime you want to come back, we can do a seasonal special. Anytime we have new produce coming in, I'm going to do a little throwdown here. I'm going to give you a little challenge. I want you to come up with a broccoli cocktail.
What about parsnip? Can you parsnip this year?
I love parsnips.
I know. It has a little anise thing going on.
Yeah, but parsnips are easy because they're kind of sweet and peppery. And you could,
broccoli.
Broccoli?
Next time I'm on, broccoli.
The broccoli.
I will pick up that gauntlet.
All right. The challenge has been thrown down. All right, so thank you so much for coming out here to Bushwick and joining us at Roberta's Pizzeria on the Heritage Radio Network, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Absolutely, thank you.
Thank you for listening tonight. This is Why We Cook. I'm Chef Erica Wides from the Institute of Culinary Education, and this is the Heritage Radio Network, and we'll see you again soon. Thanks.